implement objectives of the Declaration of Strategic Partnership and Cooperation Framework between United States and Uzbekistan dated 2002. Today, we maintain constructive political dialogue, bilateral security and economic cooperation, as well as partnership on the issues of human dimension. It is important to underscore, however, that we favor a balanced development for all of those four dimensions, allowing none of them to prevail over the others. All areas need to be treated equally. Continuing association with the tables, I want to point a table can only be stable if it has all full sets of four legs. So there is a huge potential and avenue for interaction at different levels, not only between our governments, but civil institutions, NGOs, and experts as well. Currently, we are witnessing active interaction and increasing interest from both sides to conduct the exchange of experience and knowledge. We hope that such contacts will further develop into an institutionalized partnership. Here is yet another message I would like to deliver to this audience. The narrative about Uzbekistan should not be limited to security or energy issues. Uzbekistan and the Uzbek people have much more to offer to the world and to our U.S. Partner. Since independence was declared in 1991, our society has been aiming to combine modernity with the discovery of its past and to integrate its historical legacy into the larger globalized framework. This is especially true for a historically developed institution of self-governance, Mahalda, which has its own unique identity. I will not go into deep into this, since Dr. Abdulwahid and other members of our delegation are well prepared to elaborate upon it with a deeper and broader context. But it must be noted that, in fact, it is a truly democratic institution that keeps our nation united and helps our people to cope with the life challenges, as well as maintain the national, cultural, and spiritual identity. This is our national heritage. It is no coincidence that today, today's roundtable on self-governance is being held in Washington, D.C. The experience of the United States is building a strong democratic state and developing a strong civil society has always been and still is a particular interest to us. In this regard, today's event provides an opportunity to share the experience of Uzbekistan in the development of local self-governance, as well as to learn more about civil foundation in the United States. I'm confident that today's presentations and open discussion will become an invaluable addition to the Uzbekistan narrative in Washington, D.C., and help us to better understand the true meaning and depth of ongoing civil society development policy in Uzbekistan. In conclusion, I would like to once again to thank our partners, in particular this laureate for organizing this event and to express my confidence that this the ideas and recommendations that will be from today's roundtable discussion will find practical application in our efforts to strengthen civil society in Uzbekistan. So I will stop here, and if you will, I will pass the floor to Dr. Abdulrahim. Thank you very much.
Of course, as a part of former Soviet Union educational military power services or military power system of former Soviet Union, and more, with the presence of Communist Party, it was really one-sided. So because of it, when we became an independent country, we found out that we have to turn our education into, first of all, business education and civil society. So we had to bring more international education into place. Okay. The first step was, we sent our students into developed educational centers, and we had from 1997, at least 100 people each year sent by Uzbek government through interesting arrangement through such kind of a foundation like Umid Foundation. Of course, Umid Foundation was initiated by the government of Uzbekistan, and the only way, to initiate this kind of a foundation at that time was, first of all, the government of Uzbekistan was just raising an issue. It was trying to find a way to bring different institutions to help to address this issue. And one important thing, each year we were sending our students into the United States, UK, and some other countries. And of course, we were really concerned about such kind of things, like we have our pocket, which is limited anyway. And with this pocket, we could only afford only hundreds of students. But the country itself, with 30 million people altogether today, needed much more students to be educated outside of the country. And we found out that we had to open international universities in Pakistan, and we did it. From 2002, there was one UK university operated in Uzbekistan. Later, it became 7 different universities, including this year, it will be Inha University opened in Uzbekistan, which will address IT and software engineering, electronics. So now we have a system according to which we have local education, international education. The most important thing, we have a bridge between two different educations. Those things which we covered, those things which we experienced in international education, we found much more effective. We brought into local education, we enriched local education, and we have such kind of a situation when there is a choice. National education, international diploma, or diploma from a local university. And another important part of these reforms in the educational sphere was actually, it's an interesting situation we have in a population today. We have more than 60% of our population with their age under 25 years. So that's why we're looking for a chance to make them more stable, provided with good skills and professions. So that's why the main emphasis was given to such kind of a thing like professional education, which is professional college, not academic class. Now in Uzbekistan, we have more than 1,500 professional college and licenses. So it means that with that educational example, with the reforms in education, I'm trying to show that everything we have done, we will do it in a system so that it will secure the possibility of gaining solution of other issues. The same approach we used in economy, the same approach we used in other fields, the same approach we did together with our partners and the different countries, who gave us support, who gave us directions, and all those things we have done, we did it through keeping in mind that we have our own specifics, we have our own vision, and we have our responsibilities based on the local values and many, many important things in our mind. So with this political reforms, in the year 2005, modernization of our political system. And this year, I mean, we will complete our election by December, and I think the political parties in Uzbekistan will have a chance to introduce, to nominate their candidate for prime minister and to organize and to coordinate the government of Uzbekistan, which is interesting, new, very difficult task, I think, with no experience to do it, and that's why I have to say that a few days before, I mean, with this National Democracy Institute of the United States and OSC, we had a training course for political parties, how to complete successfully elections and to put such kind of efforts, I mean, to be successful in creating a new government and a prime minister of Uzbekistan. So, in a civil society, first of all, as I said, we took into consideration historical peculiarities, and it is important to, especially for those who is dealing with research in the history of Central Asia, Eurasia, once again to remind that in the history of Central Asia, there was no such a state which was a religious state. There was no such kind of a governance in these states based on rule of religion. I mean, or simply to say that imams of mosques, they were not responsible for such kind of a countries in the history of the revolution. So one of the main specific parts of our life, I mean, first of all, there is such kind of a role of Islam as, first of all, great our historical value. And we keep this value together with our people, and we really respect all those things which are based on our historical values. And at the same time, in a country like Central Asia, with their history as Central Asian states, the main emphasis was even tolerance and humanism, which was the priority number one, which caused further whatever relations could be observed in these countries. So, as a mirror of this tolerance and humanism, I think we consider Mahalla, and with its history of thousands of years presence in Central Asia, especially in Central Asian countries, I have to say that it has strong past, and it has to have strong presence. With the time, when we started reconsidering the system in the country, we found out that in case if we had historical such a phenomenon like Mahalla, it will be much wider not to create or not to introduce a new system, maybe from outside of Uzbekistan, but to use our strong such kind of a tradition like having a Mahalla with such a big, maybe more peculiarities based on tolerance and humanism. So today, Mahalla is the body of civil governance in Uzbekistan, and together with other institutions, we consider it as growing, forming, developing a civil society in Uzbekistan. So, with this self-governance, which we call Mahalla, we have 10,000 Mahallas all over Uzbekistan, And together with other players, like, you know, initiative groups, different types of NGOs, and trade unions, mass media, national cultural centers, I have to say that all these kind of players, I mean, we think that this is something which, you know, in our case, or not only in our case, in the case with different other countries, I mean, considered as main players in a civil society. But one thing which is very important, I mean, during our today's discussion, we were talking about the balance between Islam and Mahalla. And I have to say, in many different countries, Mahalla could be organized together with around mosques in many cases. But as a secular country, we consider that the main, maybe appropriate way for Uzbekistan to put such a dimension when we support traditional values, and at the same time, we do together run a secular country. And secular country means that, first of all, because of respect, there is a joint motivation which could keep us doing many different things, keeping in our mind that we have to deal with different challenges coming even from Afghanistan, because, you know, we have a border with Afghanistan, and we have, because of this constitutional decision of Uzbekistan to be a secular country, we can keep this kind of a balance in which everything presented, but in a healthy way. So, in a self-government, as an institution of self-government, has 32 functions given by the government of Uzbekistan to run, including welfare distribution. As I know, in my own experience, I mean, I heard that sometimes it's very difficult to distribute welfare. So that the welfare should be most effectively considered as a help for those who need it. Mahalla today is in Uzbekistan responsible for distribution of welfare for those families, I mean, who need it. And Mahalla, with financial crisis, which we still feel the pressure of financial crisis in Mahalla, has a function to help to organize the business, to consult how to organize business, and to support the business, which could cause many different things, including, first of all, I mean, additional income for local people in their mahalla or territory in which they organize their self-government body. And first of all, to create new jobs for people, which is important, especially for us, because, you know, with a 30 million population, first of all, we are responsible for providing more and more jobs for people, so that they could be stable and they could keep stable the country. So, with all these functions, there is a few other things which could be mentioned. I mean, like, you know, before some even 20, 25 years ago, there were no women to be responsible for Mahalla. Now we have, those who is responsible for Mahalla, heads of Mahalla, ladies elected by local people. And I have to say that the election process is quite, interesting process. Becoming more and more intense in terms of, much more people, not only people who have enough experience, but also maybe knowledge could be demanded for them. And, they're trying to be elected and nominate themselves to be head of this mahalla, and trying to be directed for the shape of this mahalla. And one another important thing, I think, you know, with this tradition of, you know, of central Asia, there is a certain value of family. I know that, you know, in English speaking, we will be facing different things, including maybe because of this market economy, there will be some new dimensions, you know, we have to face with. But I think when we keep putting together, you know, traditional approach and our new values and values historically subject in this country, I think, first of all, we will gain something which is very important for us. I mean, we will bring more, you know, stability into this region with, together with market economy and together with macroeconomy involved in all these kind of important things. The next step for the future of Mahalay, you know, because of we adopted a few new laws in Uzbekistan, and the main important you know, direction in which you know, Mahalla will be actively working, it will be public control and sort of partnership. Together with it, I think, you know, all those things which we do in the civil society of Uzbekistan, this is some kind of a steps taken, with taking into consideration the experience of different countries, including maybe our partners, United States and some other countries, I mean, especially because of, you have such an experience. You have experience for maybe more than, as we had discussion today, more than not 200, but 250 years even. And at the same time, you know, with this 23 years of independence, we put together and we secure the movement towards, you know, more and more balanced civil society in which the country itself has to feel comfortable with its people. So we do it for our own sake. I mean, we feel comfortable with this Mahalla in many different arrangements together with us, but we do it in a system. And, you know, this is something which I was really interested in introducing to you. But, you know, together with my colleagues, I would be really interested in hearing from you and your vision so that we could share, or you could share with us some of your observations and visions. Thank you very much.
Just keeping in mind that we will, you know, cover other issues a little bit like it's impossible to do it because you know you have to create some kind of a base for future other arrangements. And the second thing, I mean, you know, there is such a close relations between Mahalla and schools and the local community, so that you know, usually when we have a person who is responsible later for Mahalla, see some of my you know colleagues who had a chance to be in Uzbekistan, they will support it. Usually they are former teachers. And you know, those aksakals, we call it, I mean, the person who is responsible for Mahalla, elected as a person responsible for Mahalla, usually, in many cases, they are school teachers or even directors of a school or a primary school or something like that. One another important thing, when you have a school in a certain neighborhood, all issues related to this school, somehow through parents will be actually expressed to the authorities of Mahalla, and authorities of the Mahalla, those who is responsible for Mahalla, will approach to the member of parliament who was elected, not necessarily only by single Mahalla, it could be some 5-6 Mahallas altogether. Then the member of parliament will express his concern, and later, just in case, if it will be only the question or matter of you know, reconstruction of school or constructing the road or something, or bridge or something like that, it will be just given to the government of Uzbekistan, and the government of Uzbekistan through its district division, as we call it, Hakim of district, governor of the district will take necessary arrangements. But it's not only limited with you know, such kind of issues like you know, buildings or something like that. In many cases, the like in some American you know, the neighborhood administration you know, authorities, when they are really interested in keeping order in this particular neighborhood, that could be school involvement too. So different, the range of different involvement into issues, it could be vice versa, when the school could help to Mahalla to organize election. In many you know, cases when you don't have facilities for organizing big space for election or something like that, usually I mean, schools support the election process in Mahalla.
Yes. Can you also introduce yourself?
Okay. I'm Renee Weinbein, and I was formerly with the International Organization for Migration in Tajikistan. So I was especially interested in your point that you made about job creation and the role of Mahallas in job creation. And I wanted to hear more about what they're doing to create jobs so that Uzbek people don't have to go to Russia for migration, and also consequently, what are the Mahallas doing to address issues that maybe Uzbek migrants suffer from? So, for instance, we've seen in Central Asia a lot of issues with tuberculosis and those kind of diseases, and a lot of migrants are sent back, of course, from Russia, and then also maybe Russian language promotion within Uzbekistan. So, thank you.
Well, you see, I mean, we had a very interesting discussion today with this particularly interesting question. You say, I have to say that still we will be dealing with this issue, in my understanding, because of the world itself. I mean, it's open, and some people will prefer to go outside, and some people will prefer to stay in their own country. We are not in a position to close this society; it's impossible. But you know, together with Mahalla, I'm not considering Mahalla as a main force to create the jobs in a country like Uzbekistan, but to support the creation of a jobs, and sometimes you know those things which they can help. I mean, this is you know, not a big business we are talking about, not a big factories we are talking about, not a big you know, big, big plans, and it could be introduced by with the support of Mahala or something like that. It is small factories, small, something like a small business, which could be consulted by Mahala, and Mahala can find from outside of Mahala good consultants for that kind of a purposes that can do this job for the local people. But based on maybe traditional technologies we have. You know, in our country today, one of the most interesting diversion which has to be developed, first of all, this is tourism, business, and services. You know, still we feel that we have to fill this gap. And there are so many other empty spaces which it has to be given as a good opportunity for people to be active. Mahala can just support this kind of approach when people will be doing some kind of a business and services and tourism and create like domestic small products. Which could be good for outside tourists to buy in Uzbek. So we are talking about not a big number of jobs could be created. But in terms of the country itself, when we have 10,000 mahallas, and if each mahalla supports the creation of maybe some 10, 15 jobs for them, I mean, this is interesting solution. In our case, one another important thing. I mean, those who is currently outside of Uzbekistan, they have a families, and families have to be supported by mahallas, and that's the usual case. I mean, when you have a mahallas with the number of families who have parents outside of Uzbekistan working in some other countries, that's the best way of the interaction and useful interaction could be supported for this group of people. During discussion, we had a very interesting, I gave maybe interesting example. In the year 2002, we were studying the group of people who came from Uzbekistan working in the United States of America. There was question. Do they integrate with American society? Do they, positive enough in terms of no danger could cause because of their presence? Is it quite a healthy, a group of people? And we found interesting situation when we found a group of people working in Disneyland, I mean, Uzbeks who worked in Disneyland. And I said that, there's no more Disneyland you have Uzbekland from now. Because of those who came, I mean, they're Uzbeks, not necessarily not even English language. But, it could be even a positive, interaction between people. One important thing we are interested in, our younger generation is quite educated, and especially after the introduction of professional college and license, they have good language, at least I mean three languages, Uzbek, Russian, and English language, which is it's an interesting combination. And if they could have a good profession, in such kind of cases, when we are not in a position to stop them going outside, it will be good them to be employed by international companies, in working for these kind of companies outside of Uzbekistan, and it will be useful for us. So this kind of approach, it has two different sides, for Mahala and for the country itself.
Mr. Alai or Mr. Safadzadar, would you like to talk about it? Mahala business is the example. Yeah. And it will be better in case if Mansoor did it, because otherwise we have to translate, he knows.
Okay.
No?
Okay.
It's okay. It's the next question.
All right.
Please.
Okay. Yes.
I'm a researcher here at the Central Asia Program. Mr. Ambassador was saying in his introductory remarks that Marhala was is a truly democratic structure. Marhala is actually viewed by many analysts, on the contrary, as a way for the state to control the society and to control its citizens in their daily life. And talking with people in Uzbekistan, it is true that a lot of people actually consider that Marhala is a way to control them. My question is this negative image that Marhala have a point of concern for the Uzbek government, and if yes, how the Uzbek government could change this negative image? Thank you.
So with your permission, I will answer to this question. As I said, why Marhala in Uzbekistan? Do we have any other tradition in a country like Uzbekistan for self-governance? No. Only one way, to find solution in using Marhala for self-governance without bringing from outside different systems which could not maybe in many cases coincide with our own traditions. Another important thing, my own personal experience, when we were discussing in 1991, 1992 with what to start and what to do, and many of our American experts, came to Uzbekistan together with us, and we were having different roundtable discussions with anthropologists, from United States. We found out that it will be easier solution for the country to run things together with Marhala from the beginning. And, the idea was expressed not because of, we were just trying to find whom to control and how to control. The best way to provide an opportunity for people to govern themselves is to use their own traditions, for the sake of the country. And at the same time, I have to say that one thing we control, in terms of being a secular country, in terms of understanding that the nature of the country is a secular country. When we compare it with different countries, as I said, we found out that many things could be done around mosques. We're a secular country, and we're looking for a chance to put those dimensions which could cause or could help us to stay secular. And because of this, I have to say that, of course, there is a certain involvement of imams of local mosques into different things in Marhala. But at the same time, he is another person, number one, in this Marhala, which is different, entirely different than in any other country around Uzbekistan. So in this kind of a cases, we control. But other control, what kind of a control are you talking about?
Hi, I'm Melba Horimamba from The Voice of America. Just to continue on this topic that you started, you did mention about the role of Marhala in maintaining social stability and security. What is the relationship like between Marhala committees and the internal security services, for example? Actually, just to, to get some specific information. And the second question I had about, you also mentioned about the election process of Marhala committee chiefs. What is the process like? Who emerges as the chairman or chairwoman of the committee?
talk about stability and security, you talk about stable families and stable people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I gave you example with education and professional license and professional college. You know, the population of Uzbekistan has 60% of it under the age of 25. And if no profession, no knowledge, I think we can feel that it could be, it could cause us a problem with stability and security in the country. Everything you know, depends to each other in consistency. Because of it, we put this you know, direction, especially for our education, when we cover Uzbekistan with obligatory 12 years education and 3 years will be given for professional education. But this is free education. You know, obligatory education, everybody has to go through it. But when we talk about university education, the education on the level of university, actually, we are not in a position and we don't have any chance to cover everybody. I mean, it's impossible to cover all population with university education. It's impossible. Like, in any country you will find somehow 10, 12, up to 18 in Germany, percent of those who was covered, or maybe twice or even 3 times covered by education. But the rest of the people, the biggest part of the people, they have to have knowledge and professions, but what kind of a professions we're talking about? A professional skill which will fit the new market approach and new technology. And that means that they will earn money. That means that they will be stable, they will create their families, and of course they will not transfer any problems into society. So everything comes together, I mean, education and mahalla. Mahalla, when it does its own job by creating new jobs for people, by supporting different families, by helping these families to find a solution for their problems. I mean, I think I'm talking about, in general, I mean, the sustaining stability and security in a country.
Okay,
hi,
sir.
I wanted to say a few words about elections. Well, at the beginning, I mean, it was in 1992, 1993, when we were just trying to do first steps in this particular direction, we found out that there was no such an interest of all professionals, I mean, to go to election and to nominate themselves as at the head of future administration of Maha. First of all, because of, it's interesting for people. The motivation changed more than this. I mean, they found a way that they have some power, they have responsibilities. So it's, you know, I have to say this is a tough, process now. I mean, and, you know, different people used to, fight against each other, and sometimes there is another issue to be addressed. I mean, how to keep them cool. I mean, not to fight each other. And seems to me that is another interesting dimension we found out. 15, 20 years ago, I mean, the head of Mahalla was the person with his age up to 60s and 70s. Now, you can find people with some experience, motivation, professional skill in management, and they found that there is a good job for them. And of course, it's limited with 3 years' time. They could be re-elected, but it will be a little difficult, I mean, because, you know, we have to fight again. And, it's an interesting process. No? When Mahala used to vote directly for that or another person and made its own choice.
Yeah, I wondered if you could tell me a bit about the budget for the Makala, where it comes from.
From the government.
Oh, which government? The central government?
Central government distributed through districts.
Okay, then how is there the means to express local interests when it's central money?
But it's not only central money. I mean, they have additional money given by foundations and... And to say, at the same time, you know, we're talking about the country itself with the system when the head of district has to report to local, assembly or something like that. We call it the local assembly. So, you know, there is different reports coming from different parts of the people. And it's not necessarily district has to be responsible for those issues. Because, you know, at the same time, they have elected a person who became a member of parliament, central parliament, which could press on the government today with a new supported dimension.
Two other questions. One about the ethnic minorities and the way they participate in the Makala, because if there is Makalas everywhere in the country, it means there are also Makala, for example, in some neighborhood in Tashkent where there are still a lot of Russian or Russian-speaking minorities. And I was wondering how these Russians were participating in the Makala and if sometimes they were having some kind of specific request, if sometimes they were asking to have, I don't know, the Orthodox priest participating in the committee. So is there any kind of sometimes ethnic color to the Makala,
yep,
or not? And the second question is about not migration abroad, but internal migration. There are a lot of rural young people going coming to the cities, and I was wondering the role of the Makala in helping these young people arriving in the city in being better integrated. Maybe there is some kind of housing issue where the Makala can play a role for this internal migrant.
Thank you for an interesting question. I was telling about for years and then for centuries there was one important thing, I mean, the great tolerance we have in our block. And today we discussed a very interesting question with our colleagues on the presence of Jewish community, I mean, Bukharian Jewish community in Uzbekistan for, not only in Uzbekistan, but also in all Central Asia for centuries, I mean, maybe more than 1,000 years. I mean, they were presented in Uzbekistan, they lived together, and there was no contradictions between, them and other ethnic groups. So I have to say that 100 different ethnic groups presented in Uzbekistan. Still, you know, the number, sometimes changes because of flow. And the most important thing, still tolerance still remains as a tolerance as it was. And because of it, I mean, I think it will be an interesting example, in Yunusabad, which is a part of Tashkent city, there is Mahala with 95% of Uzbeks and run by a Korean person, head of Mahala, which is the usual, picture in a country like Uzbekistan. You have some Russians presented in Makala. It could be a Russian person responsible for Makala. Could be another. Within Uzbekistan, you can find different ethnic health teams, which easily comes together with this tolerance. I don't think we have such a situation when we have to address to this issue. In many cases, it's done like it has to be done. And with is this inner migration in the country? Well, when usually with the country like Uzbekistan, we still we have 60% of our population who lives in rural areas, and of course, I mean with the development of cities and with the changes in technology, especially in, using more new technologies in agriculture. There is another dimension which is interesting for all of us, I think. We need less and less cotton, and we need less people, I mean. And, we need more even green. I mean, we sell green today, I mean, to Afghanistan, and it's a new dimension which we have in Afghanistan. Still, you know, we need less and less people to stay in the village. One important thing we do, I mean, we recreate, reconsider the shape of villages. And now there is such a program according to which, I mean, more and more city-style villages constructed in the countryside of big cities. And at the same time, you know, the more and more people come to cities like Tashkent and Samarkand and Bukhara, and you know, they live somewhere, and in those places, I mean, there is of course, I mean, mahalla, and mahalla is quite alta to bring them into community, to address their issues, and to put them into you know, into the process. So the process itself, I mean, it is something like, you know, bringing them together, first of all.
Yeah, John Herbst from the Atlantic Council. Have you, in the government in Tashkent, or any social science organization in Tashkent, done any studies regarding the views of people of Uzbekistan toward the mahallas, their confidence in the institutions, and the extent to which they use them?
You know, we brought the book together with us today. I mean, which is you know, the name of it, From a Strong State into a Strong Society, and in which I think it will be interesting for you to find there the study which was done by you know, ijtimai fikr, we call it, I mean, social idea or something like that. So they've studied this issue, and it is given in a book. But it's not limited with these studies. I mean, we have the Institute for Monitoring of Development of you know, Civil Society, and one part of this civil society, as I said, we consider mahalla. So the Institute for Monitoring of the Development of Forming and Development of Civil Society presented in each region of Uzbekistan, and it is independent. The institute is, which is trying to address different visions, including the vision of the people, how they feel themselves. I mean, how do they feel themselves within the mahalla, and if there is any needs, I mean, to be addressed, any needs to be covered. The institute will raise the issue in a different level so that they can be, you know, settled.
Okay.
If you want, I mean, Your Excellency, he is ready to answer on behalf of the institute.
Well, I present here the Independent Institute for Monitoring the Formation of Civil Society. One of our tasks is to study, work with the mahallas, work with the population, and to learn, to study the opinion and the vision of people according to mahalla and other NGOs' activity, and at the same time, the activity of the government. So we work close with the population of Uzbekistan in each region. Recently, we made special research on this topic, make this kind of research every year. We study opinion of public, and according to the results of this research, we prepare proposals to the local government, to the central government, and other organizations which are responsible for the interaction with the NGOs and the population. So, according to this research, we are holding special studies with the representatives of Mahallas and other institutes of the civil society, and with the cooperation with the international our partners like India, USAID, OEC. We also make joint research. We make joint trainings, and after all this, we are preparing annual reports, annual research, which are aimed for the organizations and government and non-government organizations which work in this sphere. So it's except our organization, as the professor said, we've had a number of organizations which work with the public and NGOs.
We thought that it would be something like a round table discussion, but this is something we have as a press conference.
That's our usual format. So.
I'm Christine Garrett, I'm with AAAS. And this leads in nicely to my question. If you consider the young age of Uzbekistan's population, I'd like to ask a question about open access to information on the Mahallas and also transparency. When you consider the great network that they provide to Uzbekistan, how is the Uzbek public able to access information on the Mahallas? Are you considering social media, and as internet becomes more widespread across Uzbekistan, can you not use that to your advantage to help educate people not only on the outside about what's taking place, but also internally as well? There's an immense amount of information that could be utilized.
It's a good question, actually. I mean, we are trying to introduce even the electronic government system in Uzbekistan, because then it was out access to internet system. Information and with all access to information, there would be no chance to introduce it to governments in the country. And at the same time, you know, with the local part of our internet, I have to say that there is still many issues we want to address. The number of websites in the country itself, increasing rapidly, but still, has to be increased even maybe some 5-10 times, because there is such kind of a thing. Local people used to use their local language and the Uzbek language, and we do it in Uzbek. But at the same time, our kids, they became trilingual, they know English and they know Russian language and Uzbek, so that the question is, the answer for the question from both sides, I mean, our younger generation is much more capable to get any information from the world community. And at the same time, there is another generation which needs to be informed through mass media and internet. And at the same time, I have to say that the local life is given in all in other sources like newspapers and journals, whatever. And one another important thing, I represent academy of the state governments under the president of Uzbekistan. And I have to say that for my needs, it is very important for those who will be placed later as those who will be responsible for governing. On a different level, first of all, the government itself. So they have to be ready to be informed, and they have to find sources. And I'm glad to inform you that the academy itself has
open access for 20,000 different journals in English. I mean, but it was supported by UNDP, and you know, there is many different ways how to find a way, because you know, it's somehow it has to be paid, and it was an easy decision. I mean, it's easiest decision to find an institution which could be interested in helping, and they did it. And it is done for, you know, for those who will be responsible for governing different bodies in the country. If those people who is, you know, responsible for governing, and they have to be jealous and hungry about those things, they will do everything in order to fill this empty space with other people. So that information is the target number one.
Thank you. Marina Barnett, our product on Global News in Malaysia. What about mahalas outside of Uzbekistan? For example, the Uzbek mahala in Osh. Do they play the same roles? Do they fulfill the same functions? And are there connections with these mahalas outside of Uzbekistan? Thank you.
It could be. I mean, in many cases, one thing which could be different. Understanding that the country is secular, we did everything to keep, you know, mahalas, you know, as a central position. People, secular people, have to run these mahalas. In Osh, my observation is, you know, I found that it could be done. Based around mosque or something like that, which, in my understanding, you know, this is first of all a little, you know, not so secular perception, and especially when you have market economy pressing on you. Especially when you have to deal with different threats like Islamic extremism and terrorism or something. Also, I have to say that I see no links between Islamic, so-called terrorism and extremism with directly Islam. But that could be different. That could be in a few other things when you saw the situation in 2000. In my understanding, with Osh situation, when Mahala could be a much more stabilizing force in that situation. But, you know, in reality, it was not like that. So I do, really consider Mahala, together with all of my colleagues, I mean, as a stabilizing force, a stabilizing unit in a society, in the complicated societies like we have in Kyrgyzstan or in Uzbekistan. Yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Emily Kelly with the Department of Defense. I wanted to build upon Christine's question a little bit more and ask you about the involvement you see of the youth in mahalas. How is that developing? And then how do you see that foreseeing the impact in the future of mahalas? As new people come in, new generations come in, things tend to change with the times. And I also wanted to say, as you noted, it's a round table. So if anybody around has some insights or some thoughts, I'd certainly be happy to hear them.
Thank you very much. You did a great job for me. So maybe I can start with it. Like people support. The market economy is pressing anyway, and the level of the people being swamped with their own needs and own profession and work, whatever, could be much higher and higher, you know. But at the same time, there is such kind of a very important thing. I mean, keeping, preserving, the historical values and family still is a great value in the United States, and nobody will ignore it. I mean, you see, you respect your kids. I mean, that's the most important thing. Still, we will be facing different situations, but we will adapt ourselves, together with Mahala, towards keeping, preserving, and maybe even developing these values for the sake of Mahala. This is my opinion, and maybe our colleagues and friends can join us in this interesting discussion.
Allison here, the State Department.
Okay.
To sort of play off of Emily's question, one thing I've noticed about Uzbekistan is that you don't have a large outflow of orphans, inter-country adoptions, the way some other post-Soviet societies have. And I know in the video that you provided for me ahead of your visit, there was a mention of how the Mahalas interact with orphans and perhaps like destitute children. I was wondering if you could talk more about how Uzbekistan's approach to the problem of orphans is, and what you guys have done, especially through Mahalas, in order to protect children in society.
It's actually, it's a question.
Sorry.
Well, we obey our tradition, actually. The most important thing, in the Mahala itself, I mean, this is target number one, to keep orphans, stable. Certain services provided, and in such kind of a situation, I know that there is such kind of a practice when we in Mahala, when somebody without kids and their families, because of different reasons, try to adopt orphan from such kind of a places. Orphanages or something like that. Mahala is the number one institution which will give advice to permit to adopt kid or not, because they know exactly, is it stable family? Will it be good for this family to have this kid, child, or it will be even more, bigger problem to face with Mahala. That's one issue, one important approach which could be found in many places. And at the same time, I have to say that, especially when it was some, 2002, 2003 in Uzbekistan, we reconsidered. Again, the policy, the government of Uzbekistan, we consider the policy towards this kind of a places in which we have orphans. More support given after it, more different community involvement, new level of community involved, security. In particular, such kind of a places when we have different companies presented, local companies even. Is in business. And it seems to me a new value, associations found as an image. If you have the chance to help the such house, you will have some kind of a blessing for your future business or something like that, which is interesting. I mean, it could be even more effective in many cases than any other approach. So this is a combination of with Mahala, Mahala, and local business community, and states, of course.
Let me just clarify something here. The format was never meant to be a roundtable. I don't know who brought it up. I think somebody mistakenly declared this to be a roundtable. It was really a panel discussion and then question and answer. So we're really following the format.
I'm okay with this.
I'm okay with it.
There is no complaint.
No. That's fine. It's actually a half roundtable.